Gourds have been cultivated and used for thousands of years all over the world, and we're going to be talking about gourds today. Next, with our guest, the Gourd Gal, Terry Schmidt. She founded the Wisconsin Gourd Society. She helps put together the Wisconsin Gourd Fest, although there's a new name this year. We'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll talk gourds with her. Maybe you grow gourds. What types do you prefer? You may have a question about them. I hope you'll call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Terry Schmidt, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back here again, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. So you changed the name of your festival.
We did, and there was a method to our madness because there used to be an Illinois Gourd Society.
Yeah.
And there used to be an Iowa Gourd Society, and they've gone belly up.
Oh.
And so we acquired a lot of their members.
Uh-huh.
And so we just decided that we would call it the Midwest Gourd Fest, sponsored by the Wisconsin Gourd Society. And so it's working out. It's got a nice name.
Yeah.
A nice ring to it.
I like that. I like that name. So that's coming up April 8th, isn't it?
It is.
Olbrich Botanical Gardens.
Again, at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. Yeah. We'll have...
In Madison
on Atwood Avenue. We'll have probably close to 15 or 20 vendors. Everything is indoors. Of course, our typical kids' corner, where the kids will be able to do, I think, maybe face painting, but then they'll also have a make and take project and some coloring, learning the gourds, a lot of stuff for the kids. We have music. We can talk about who our music is this year.
Yeah.
You know some of our musicians, I think.
Yeah, and the art.
Yeah, the gourd art competition.
Oh.
That's always a big deal.
Yeah, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, there's a lot of prep that goes into that also, because we have to be certified as judges in order to judge the competition, certified by the American Gourd Society. So some of us have gone to other shows where they have judges certification programs, and you know, we'll spend an evening in a class learning how to judge, and then once we've gone through that, we basically pick up their rules, and we might make some rules specific to our area, but mostly we use American Gourd Society standards for judging. And then once a year, we have to go back through having a class in order to keep ourselves up, and we have to judge either here or at some other Gourd Society in order to keep our certification. And so we have some really good judges, some really good artists. And, you know, the hard part about judging is we all have our own... you know, likes and dislikes, our taste in art. And so the hardest part of that, I'm a judge trainer.
Yeah.
So the hardest part is to train people to look at a piece of art and not hear them say, well, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, because your like doesn't have anything to do with it. It's got everything to do with the quality of the art. Yeah.
You can't do that.
Right. And we have some fantastic artists here, just incredible artists, and new ones coming up every year. People that show up out of nowhere that we didn't even know existed with some fantastic stuff. So,
well, you know, gourds have been around, as I said, for thousands of years. And they've been, we were talking about this before the show, and Lexi doesn't know a lot about gourds, and she's a young sprout.
And those young sprouts.
We actually came up, purses came up, and I said, I don't know if they make purses out of gourds or not, but do they?
Oh, they do. Yeah, there's a woman in, I won't think of the name of the town, but it's west of, sort of between Blue Mounds and Platteville. And her husband make some incredible gourd purses, and another woman in the Milwaukee area that makes really, it's pretty amazing that you can walk around with a gourd hanging off your side and still look good. But yeah, they do. I mean, they've been used for everything. And in fact, I was listening to your show maybe a month ago, and I don't remember who it was you had on, but it was a woman who was talking about agriculture, and she said the oldest known cultivated seed was gourds. Yeah. And I heard that and I was just like, yeah, yeah. I've been trying to tell you that. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, what else? How else are they used? Instruments, for sure.
A lot, yeah, on instruments. So I think the first known use of them was as a carrying object.
Yeah.
So people would fish. And then they would hold a gourd on their heads, and they would catch fish by hand, mm-hmm. and they would put the fish in the container, in the vessel. So that was probably one of the earliest uses as scoops.
Yeah.
So dipper gourds
ladles.
Are used, yep, as ladles. And in fact, there are a lot of people native to other countries who are here who have come to our farm or asked us at the farmer's market to make them specific things that they used in their country, mostly ladles. Yeah, so it's very big. Like in the Hmong community uses them as ladles. The Hispanic community uses them as water bottles. They still do. We still get a lot of people that ask for those things. And in a way, it's kind of neat because it gives them back a taste of home.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Well, you gave me a gourd last year and I made a birdhouse out of it.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, no more than 2 days, and I had some little birds
little
in there.
Little wrens in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some little wrens in there, and they hatched out some birds.
Sweet.
And it's still up. I just left it up over winter.
Yeah.
It doesn't look any the worse for wear.
No, they'll come back, too. That's the heck of it. We had one last year. It was the first time I'd seen chickadees in a birdhouse, and it was very funny because they must have been doing some construction on the inside because you always knew when they were in there because they were pecking on the inside of the gourd. So I don't know if there could have been fiber seeds and fiber on the inside that they were trying to move around or help to make nesting material, but very rare for us to see chickadees in there. Yeah.
Well, it's and then the art portion of it.
Wow.
talk about that because it's so broad.
Right. Art comes in so many flavors. You know, there are people who are really good at carving. And so you'll see a lot of like leaf bowls. And I think last year I probably gave you a couple of photos that you put up of bowls that were carved like leaves. And so carving is a big one. Birdhouses are big. Using them as like collections of gourds to make sculptures.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we had a woman that brought some pieces in for the competition, and she had these huge people. I mean, they were like maybe 3 feet high.
Yeah.
And huge, just big projects where she used many, many. I've done small pieces where I might incorporate 7 or 8 or 15 different pieces to make something pieces. But this
yeah.
one was like using entire gourds, you know. So, yeah, so they can be used for sculptures. They can be used for clocks. You know, you can cut the round out of a gourd and use it for a clock. It's just, it's really endless as long as you have an imagination.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. Well, the manipulation of gourds is kind of interesting to me.
Mm. That's very cool. So years back, I'm going to say like, I could be wrong, but maybe in the 40s or probably in the 40s, there was this fellow named Jim Story. He was a big player in the American Gourd Society and getting it started and keeping it moving. And he was a grower. And he was, as so far as we know, one of the earliest manipulators. And so he would tie them into knots. He would bend them in certain ways. And actually, gourd manipulation goes way back to Japan when they would put gourds inside of like a box that had a shape to it, like maybe a Buddhist face on the inside.
Oh.
And they would put the gourd as it was growing inside of this container. And when it was full grown, they would break off the container and you would have this face. Now, that's an art that was almost lost and was brought back to us by Jim somebody, oh my God, Jim's last name, from the caning shop in Berkeley. I can't think of his last name right now. But he brought that back to life, and now actually you can buy those containers to do this on gourds. But so Jim's story started this whole thing of tying them in knots and manipulating them, and because he was so influential in the American Gourd Society, he made sure that all the states knew about it. And so there were farmers all over the country that were trying to manipulate and breaking gourds in the process, because it's really, really hard to do. So at one point, you know, there was like a long-handled dipper that had a knot in it. And then there was a long-handled dipper that had two knots in it. And then I think there was kind of a bounty out for whoever could make three knots in a long-handled dipper. And so when Jim passed away several years ago, the American Gourd Society created the Jim Story Award. And so each gourd society that has a competition can have a category for manipulation. And so farmers or just regular growers can bring in their manipulated gourd and be judged on it. And the winner of each individual state then can submit, they don't have to, but the winner can submit to be in the Jim Story Award. And the American Gourd Society has three place prizes, and they're monetary prizes, and it's pretty good. So, yeah, it's pretty good. I think I sent some photos to Jill, and I think she's going to post them. Yeah,
We'll have them up on her. I probably, Lexi says, yeah, I've already got those up.
Oh, so. Okay. So one of them I thought was very cool is a treble clef. I'm a music teacher, and so I'm, you know, I'm always looking for anything musical. And my husband brought that in to me the other day and said, okay, so that's one that's, so there's
yeah,
one.
I'm going to,
yeah,
going to Facebook right now. You should,
right.
Oh my goodness.
So that one
me.
Is three extra long handled dippers that have been tied together, and you cannot take those apart. So, and,
oh,
and that stands,
goodness.
It's
look at those.
Taller than me. Well, it doesn't take much to be taller than me, but it's probably maybe 6 feet tall.
Oh, man.
And then there's another one in there that's shaped like a treble clef. And in music, that's a big deal. So
we'll be back right after this look at the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about gourds today with our gourd gal, Terry Schmidt. She's also founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, helps put together the annual Midwest Gourd Fest, which is taking place on April 8th, so a week from this weekend, coming weekend. And it's in Madison at the Obrick Botanical Gardens, which, I mean, come on, just, you know, you can go there and spend. I spend a lot of time there, so I really enjoy it. You may have questions about gourds, about growing them, about the art surrounding them. I hope you'll join in. You know, here I was going to have you play on your flute to start the show back, and I completely forgot about it.
That's okay. We have time.
We'll get you playing on that. Give a call with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Bob from Kewaunee asks, what kind of paint should he use on his gourd birdhouses? And also, how big should he make the opening for a wren?
So you can find a list of opening sizes online if you just Google, like, birdhouse hole size or something. But I'm pretty sure for a wren that we need to be an inch or under. So maybe 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch. And the type of paint that you use, my experience has been that if you actually use paint, it will over time peel off, especially because Wisconsin weather is just, we either have humidity or we have cold, one or the other. So I have not found any kind of paint that actually works, even if you use a marine grade varnish over it. So usually what I have recommended is either to use a stain or something else.
Sense.
I just thought of something else. I can't, or like a wood, like a wood stain, or you can use a colored stain. And so if you want to make a design like to wood burn a design on your birdhouse, just to outline whatever your design is, and then you can use colored stain. And you can cover that with beeswax, and it'll protect the color of the stain for a pretty long time. And the nice thing about that is that as it weathers with rain or whatever, if it gets spotty, you can just reapply beeswax. And so it keeps it nice. It kind of keeps the water rolling off of it.
I got to be honest with you. I just love mine natural, and it looks great in the tree.
Yeah, they'll hold up for a very, very long time. Birds will come back to the same nest, or other birds will clean out nests and go into them. Woodpeckers will peck the hole larger. If you don't have the hole big enough for them, they'll just peck it to whatever size they want it to be. Yeah. The one thing about a birdhouse, I will say, is that you do not want to put a perch outside the hole. And the reason for that is because larger birds eat smaller birds. And so if you have a perch, you have a nice place for a big bird to wait until he can get his beak in there and get the babies out.
They become owl feeders.
Yeah.
That's what they become.
Exactly.
Well, we had Jim on Facebook recommends using calabash gourd. Is it yerba mate? Yerba mate? Yeah. Tell us about that.
Sure. Yerba mate is a tea drink popular in South America. And so it's usually drank out of a gourd that is about the size of a cup, like a coffee cup, maybe a little bit smaller. And so you put your leaves, your yerba mate leaves in there, and you use a specific kind of straw. It's called a bombilla. And a bombilla has it's covered at the end so that the tea leaves don't come up. So you put your little straw in there and you cover the leaves in water, and then eventually the cup itself is like filled with leaves and the water's at the bottom. Leaves just puff up and puff up. It's very bitter. You really have to acquire a taste for yerba mate. And I mean, I've even tried yerba mate not in a gourd, and it's still too bitter for me. I don't care for it. So it's an acquired taste. The gourd actually makes it more bitter. So it's, you know, for people that love that, you know, kind of coffee breath taste, it's not the right thing. So now let me get to the thing of making it a calabash gourd. Calabash is a word for a gourd. It is not a type of gourd. So there is a calabash tree that is usually found in the subtropics, and there is a fruit off the calabash tree that can be used. But more often, what is actually used is like a bottle gourd. Sometimes it's called a Mexican bottle gourd. It's shaped like a sort of like an hourglass. It's got a bulb at the top and a larger bulb at the bottom. And the top bulb is the part that's used. And so when you cut that off and turn it upside down, then it's the right size for yerba mate.
Oh.
Yeah.
Calabash, I'm thinking...
It means squash. It really, calabaza.
Oh, yeah. Because I was thinking of it as an instrument of whacking somebody over the head with it.
I don't know about that.
Well, maybe that's just in
That's from a different dictionary.
That's from a...
it's not in my gourd dictionary.
The dictionary of Larry here. And here we've got on Facebook, Jim posted a video showing Wren's emptying out his chickadee gourd nest.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, there you go. They'll do that. They'll reuse it. So that's a bottle gourd. That's just a regular bottle gourd, sometimes called a Mexican bottle gourd. And the bottle gourds come in different shapes, I mean, different sizes, but that's the traditional birdhouse. Sometimes people will call it a birdhouse gourd.
And here's another.
There it is. That's the treble clef. That's a great,
it does look like a treble clef.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic? So that's an extra long handled dipper gourd, and I don't think that he actually manipulated it. I think he let it grow on the ground and it grew that way, but he may have. I'm not sure.
It is really, really cool.
Yeah. I think that's really sweet.
Well, we have Louise in DeForest up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Larry and guest, I wanted your caller who was calling and asking about the size of the bird nest holes.
Sure.
He's from Kewaunee and Algoma, which is north of Kewaunee in Kewaunee County, is holding Bird City Celebration April 8th at the Youth Center, and he may want to attend and find out some questions he has about bird nests.
Very interesting, and that's actually the same day as your gourd festival.
It is. It is. So maybe he can hit two things in one day. I don't know how far Algoma is from here. But
it's a little bit of a ways.
Well,
but
he's just going to have to make a quick drop in.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, you can join in, too, with your own questions or comments or maybe experiences to share with gourds. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. In terms of the layout of your April 8th event, starts when? Is it in the morning?
It opens at 9 o'clock in the morning. Judging happens on Friday night, so anybody that's interested in bringing artwork to be judged and displayed in the or exhibited in the competition, their pieces have to be in by, I think it's 5 o'clock on Friday night. I think
okay.
We take art from 1 until 5 on Friday. And so then we'll do our judging Friday night until about 8 o'clock, I think. And then doors open to the public. I mean, Olbrich opens at 8, I believe.
Yeah.
So, but the festival officially starts at 9 o'clock, although the vendors will most likely be there earlier. Well, they will be there earlier.
Yeah.
And then it goes until 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Last year we tried to extend it till 5, and everybody was just so pooped. It didn't. We're getting too old. We end at 4 o'clock. We always ended at 4. It was my big idea to add an hour on. It didn't work. So 9 to 4. We have vendors in the commons. This year we're going to have a musical instrument exhibit in the commons as well, and so we'll have a Native American type flute. We'll have a banjo. We'll have a balafon, which is like a xylophone. We'll have some drums. We'll have rain sticks. We'll have some kind of shakers or various and sundry other instruments that are all made, a banjo. I don't know if I said that. All made out of gourds.
It's really cool. Well, you have to play. Can you play? You brought a flute.
I can. Let me tell you a little bit about this. This is made from a long-handled dipper, so it is the handle part of the dipper. And I made this several years ago up in Adams Friendship. I met a fellow who made flutes, and he held a class. And so we had to bring our flute body, whatever we wanted as our flute body, and then he provided the rest of the pieces and helped us mold them to our particular flutes. He taught us about the whole the science behind making a flute work, which is way more interesting than it looks. It's because there's actually a lot of stuff that goes on inside of the flute. So he gave us measurements and all kinds of things. And after all that work, then when it came to drilling the holes for the fingers, which one would think would be like a certain... No, he just said, put your hands on your flute and figure out where your fingers go so it's easier for you to reach. So it's kind of a cool thing. So we each made our own little flutes. They all were tuned differently because the length was different. And it was a fantastic day. It was really cool. But before I play this, I just want to say there are a couple of other a couple of books that you can use. So there's if you're interested, there's a book by Jim Whitus from the Caning Shop in Berkeley. That's the name I couldn't remember before. He and Ginger Summit wrote a book called Making Gourd Musical Instruments. This is a great book on how to make instruments.
Great.
There's also a book by Bart Hopkin called Musical Instrument Design. And that's not just for gourd. This isn't just for gourd instruments. And then there's another really crazy book called Gravichords, Whirlies, and Pyrophones. And this is also by Bart Hopkins, and it has a lot of experimental musical instruments. So for people that are interested in music and musical instruments and gourds, these books are good. But even if you're not interested in gourds, these books are fantastic fun. So, okay.
All right.
So you want me to play something?
Yeah, please
okay,
do.
So do I put this, like, in front of that?
Am I gonna,
you'll be all right. We'll see how it works.
I have to make sure everything's in the right place. Okay, here we go.
That was beautiful. I have a good friend, the daughter of a very good friend of mine, plays the flute. So I can't wait. And we'll get, I think Jill's going to put up a, post a photo of you to mine on our Facebook page of you playing.
Wait a minute. I'm on radio for a reason.
You look wonderful playing that flute. You look wonderful playing that flute.
Gosh.
It's beautiful.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
I absolutely love this.
Look of the instrument. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So this is Native American style instruments. And so I'm very careful to say it's a Native American style instrument because I am not Native American and I did, you know, it's not a Native American flute. But the sound is such that it's the same kind of sound that a Native American flute would have. And as the more I play it, the more I realize that whole, like, communing with nature and bringing the sound of the earth together inside of you as you play it, it's what happens with that music. It's so fulfilling. It's incredible to play. Yeah. And I never have a clue what I'm doing. You know, it's the beauty of it is you just kind of follow your fingers and your ears and it just does its own thing. It's very easy. Yeah.
Oh, well,
hard to make, but easy to play.
It's wonderful. Well,
thanks.
John in Fitchburg has a question about gourds. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi, this is sort of, after listening to that tune, I'm not sure if I want to ask my question. The squash beetles, are they like to eat up gourds, and do I need to put the gourds on a trellis if I'm in the garden?
Yeah, okay, so gourds do grow well on trellis, but they don't have to be trellised. The only gourds that really have to be trellised is loofah. They don't do well if they're sitting on the ground. The squash bugs will find the gourds whether you trellis them or not. So if you're thinking if you trellis them, will it keep the bugs off? No, it won't. Squash bugs are something to be concerned about. Something that you can do if you have the space is create a sacrifice area, sacrifice plant. And it's good to do that with an ornamental gourd. Ornamental gourds have a yellow flower and it draws the bugs to them more. And the hard shell gourds have a white flower and they open at night. Those bugs are not quite so active at night. So it's better to have, if you have room, have a sacrifice plant and let them eat that.
Ah, great idea. Yeah, thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate it. Regina in Denmark, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me on. Just want to ask about the proper way to dry a gourd. I've tried a number of different approaches in the past, and I've had mixed success. A lot of them end up just rotting. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to know how to properly dry the gourd.
Okay. So if your gourd rots, there's about a 99% chance that that gourd was not really mature at the point when the plant was done
Yeah.
So if you have a gourd that's mature, how you dry it shouldn't really matter. We leave ours out in the field all winter. And while sure, once in a while you might have some damage from mice, a mouse is going to go to the easiest source. So they're going to go to something that's either cracked or else very soft anyway, something that's going to be easy for them to get to. So for us, it's kind of survival of the fittest. Only the good gourds will do it. The snow doesn't hurt them. The freezing doesn't hurt them. That doesn't matter at all. What you don't want to do is put them in a basement or put them in an attached garage because gourds are mostly water when they're when they're mature. And so as they start to dry, that water comes out by sweating. And so the outside of the gourd, it molds. And you don't want to have that mold in your house. So that's the only thing I would say is just don't have them inside your living area. But otherwise, they can be in the cold, they can be hung from rafters, they can be on pallets, they can be right on the ground in the snow. It doesn't really matter. There's no one way to do it.
There you go.
I don't know if that's what Regina wanted to hear. But
Regina was busy taking notes, I think, on that, which is great. What about actually planting and that sort of thing? We have seed suppliers and so forth?
Yeah, I want to talk about this. So our primary seed supplier was Quarry Farm Gourds out of Ohio. And sadly, the owner, Anna Miller, has aged, as we all do, and she can't do it anymore. So someone you know purchased Quarry Farm Gourds. I can't believe that they actually contacted Dick Zondag from Jung.
Oh.
So Jung Seeds is now going to be the new owner of Quarry Farm. And Dick called me when all this was coming down because he said, well, gosh, we're in Wisconsin. We should know you guys.
Yeah.
The Wisconsin Gourd Society. So we talked a lot about planting. They are going to plant some of their gourds in Wisconsin for seed. It'll be interesting to see how that all works. It's a different climate. And then I think he's going to have some grown in the South for his seed as well. And I'm thinking that he's going to make sure that they're true to type seed, which is what Quarry Farms was known for.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that he's able to keep that up. He said he really did not want to get in the gourd market, but it is a good market. And they will be at the Gourd Festival also.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, wonderful.
There'll be a vendor at the festival.
Oh, I have to have the next time Dick's on the show, I'll have to ask him.
Yeah, he said it's been far too long.
Yeah, I was just thinking that myself. Yeah. I was thinking, gosh, when was the last time Dick was on the show? It's been
a while.
It's been a while, so we'll have to get him back.
So there's my little dig in for Dick for you.
Well, listen, go back and give me now a minute or a minute and a half here on the gourd.
On the festival.
Midwest Gourd Festival.
The new 11th annual Midwest Gourd Fest. It's taking place on April 8th at Ulbricht Botanical Gardens, which is on Atwood Avenue in Madison. We will have classes. Our classes include a class on Zentangles, on using philodendron gourd trim, oil stick gourd bowls, and then there's a how do I complete this class for anybody who wants to bring in a project that's been in their closet for the last 10 years that wants to know how to fix that. There's a kids corner, activities for kids, make and take, and various and sundry other projects. We will have music provided by Leafy Greens, Lisa Johnson, Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
The Lakeview Ramblers and John Vivier and Tani Diakite will play some African music. And what else do we have? The Gourd Art Competition. We have silent auction. We'll have a raffle. Tons and tons of vendors with raw gourds as well as gourd products, gourd art, stuff to put on gourds, anything you can think of that's gourd. And then this really great gourd music exhibit.
And you got a great place to park, free parking.
Free parking, free access to the festival. There's no charge for the festival. You can come and hang out all day long if you want to. There's plenty to do, plenty of seating by the music to relax and listen to music and walk around. And
Yeah, for sure.
If you want to volunteer, you can contact the Wisconsin Gourd Society. You can email.
We've got a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show.
If you want to volunteer, by all means.
I'm bringing daughter Emily over on Saturday.
Yay.
So we'll certainly look forward to that. And, you know, it's always a great pleasure, Terry. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, the Midwest Gourd Fest coming up on April 8th, so a week from Saturday. I'm going to be there. I hope you have a chance to come by and visit as well. It's always great to talk with Terry about gourds. Well, tomorrow, just to look ahead, we'll be taking a look at the role of legacy phosphorus in reduced water quality in our lakes. and also the authors of another book on the soils of Wisconsin. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.